Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here we are Sunday night in CCO land. Moose Miller working his way towards coming up here between 9 and 10 o'clock. It's the center stage portion of the Gerilyn Steele Show, which probably my favorite part of sitting in for Gerilyn on this show is this upcoming hour. We always have interesting guests along the way, but that hour is always a lot of fun, and I look forward to it, and we get to feature a lot of interesting, creative, talented people in entertainment, whether it's music or comedy, plays and shows and all kinds of fun stuff. So we'll jump right into that starting up here in the 9 o'clock hour on WCCO radio. I was just kind of looking over some of the guests coming up here as we're going to have Phil Thompson on, internationally acclaimed pop pianist. That's quite a little grab there that Jimmy Erickson got for us. So we'll talk with Phil about the upcoming show that's going to be happening December 19th at the Bloomington Masonic Heritage Center. Some other fun guests. We got some classic rock and roll Christmas tunes to talk about. Chanhassen Dinner Theater's got their holiday menu up, if you will. So we'll talk about that coming up between 9 and 10 o'clock on Center Stage here on WCCO. We're also going to try to pull into the conversation this hour Dana Donatucci. He is with the University of Minnesota, and he's the guy that when it comes to recycling, you want to talk to, because the University of Minnesota is now pushing forth an effort to become a zero waste campus. They're seeking a faculty resolution to create a program that would produce zero waste. It's pretty doggone ambitious. I just saw a story tonight on the national news on recycling efforts that are really just going above and beyond. We try to do that in our house, and, you know, you sort out the plastic, you sort out the paper and the glass and stuff like that. It always drives me nuts when people just throw stuff like that out, that it's so easy to just toss it into its own little container. Make the best use of it or reuse of it. So we'll talk with Mr. Donatucci about their efforts at the University of Minnesota, and they've really, really come up with some interesting things and ideas when it comes to recycling. You know, he's been doing this for 30 years at the good old U of M, and I think they've learned a few things there. They've also got an interesting little pilot organics program that started in Udoff Hall that they hope to expand to a couple more residential halls this year. Is that Dana? Do we have him blinking on that line there?
It is indeed.
Excellent. Let's pull Dana into the conversation here and bring him on. Dana Donatucci. I love that last name, Dana. Good evening and welcome.
Well, thank you. Yes, I'm glad to be here.
You know, you're the guy when it comes to recycling. I mean, you've been doing this for 30 years at the U, and I would imagine have come up with some innovative ideas and stuff that other people have picked up on.
Well, yeah, that's true. We've been working for a long time trying to figure out how to make us get to that zero waste level.
Well, when it comes to residence halls and, you know, you got things like food waste, and then you also have just some of the stuff that, you know, is involved in preparing food and serving food, and that has certainly changed quite a bit in 30 years.
Yes, and in fact, the food services areas have been collecting their organic material, their, you know, their food waste for about 10 years now. They're probably putting out, with all the residence halls, about 600 tons a year.
Wow. Now, you're trying to actually get a resolution to become a zero-waste campus. Tell me about those efforts to try and, you know, get that pushed through the actual faculty. How is that going to happen, and how easy is it to do something like that?
Well, there's we have the University Senate, and the majority of the folks that are on the University Senate are faculty. And through our Social Concerns Committee, they were interested in finding out how they could support our efforts in trying to recover more materials from the university's waste stream. So working with them, we put together two resolutions that will support a more expanded level of recycling and also include organics collection at the building level. Right now, most of the organics that we're doing is at the, you know, the large generators. It would be the food services. It would also be our research animal facilities with the animal bedding that they have. And now we're looking at, well, what we're collecting now is about half of what we think is on the campus that's organic material. So the other half is spread out throughout the entire campus. Everybody's eating and you know, at their desks, and, you know, there's events. And all that additional food-related material is capturable. So what we're trying to do through the resolutions is create a resolution that says that in order for the university to easily get to recover more organics would be that we convert a lot of the disposable items that we serve at, you know, through events and things like that, to compostable items like the plates, the cups, and things like that. Because one of the difficulties we have is that when you currently go through the food service areas, we've got some items that are compostable and some items are not. And when you look at them, you can't tell the difference. They look exactly like each other. So what we're trying to do through that resolution is to say that universities should support providing all this compostable stuff, so that when it comes to the educational component, we can say, well, if it's food-related waste material, then it's going to be compostable. And that just makes it so much easier to do it. Otherwise, you know, you're trying to figure out, what is this? So that's one of the resolutions. And the other resolution that we've got before them is to talk about what's called centralized collection. This is something that I've been working on for 25 years now, and that is the idea that that recycling and waste disposal at a person's work area is unbalanced. In other words, it's much easier to throw away waste at the at your desk than it is to recycle, because when the university was first created 150 some years ago, it was decided that when people generated waste at their desk, somebody would come and take it away. And then 100-some years later, we decided to put recycling in there, and we required people to separate the recycling, and they had to bring it someplace. And so that made waste disposal much more convenient than doing the recycling. So the central collection says that any material that you generate at your desk, whether it be waste or recycling, you have to bring to a centralized container that's conveniently located in your area. We have what's called the quad system, which is a four container system. One for paper, one for cans and bottles or containers, and the other one now will be for organics. And that will, you know, so everything that you need is going to be right there, so that the centralized collection means that you have to bring it there. When we did those studies 25 years ago, we found that when people did that, that the recovery rates were in the 90 percentile range. And we said, gee, that's amazing. So we've been trying to get that instituted all these years on the campus.
Sure. I don't know if you caught the national news tonight on, I think it was NBC, but they had a story about a recycler individual that has really, you know, over the last decade, done some amazing stuff when it comes to finding ways to recycle certain things that people thought, well, that's just, it's too expensive to actually do that. But they found ways to kind of repurpose it and really make a go of it. And I was really quite struck by some of the things that they're now working on. Like,
recyclable, you know, container collectors that when you put a bottle or a can in it, it actually has an audio message, you know, praising you or, you know, kind of giving you a little reward just to say, hey, thanks for doing this, or a high five or whatever. But, you know, I think all of that stuff goes a long way.
Yes, yes. It's it's very good to have that positive feedback, so that, you know, you get the right behavior, basically. You want to encourage that.
And, you know, when it comes to recycling things like plastic bottles, that seems easy enough, and metal cans or aluminum cans, glass, does that stuff still all need to be, you know, sorted individually? Or, you know, I've seen some recycling programs where you just take your bottles, your cans, your plastic, you throw it all in the same tub.
Mm-hmm. That's been a trend locally. It's been a trend nationally, basically, what's called single stream recycling, that you put all your recycled materials into one bin at the curb, and then it allows for automated systems to pick up the materials so that collection isn't confused by the fact that you have to keep all these things separate until you get to the processing facility. But the processing facilities, in order to do all that separation, are multi-million-dollar equipment facilities that it's a big undertaking. The university, we have our own facility, and what we do is we try to keep the paper from the container separate, so that we, you know, because we have low-tech sorting processes. But that is the tendency through the metro area, and you know, all these programs are somewhat different in what they accept, but the general idea is moving towards central collection just to make the collections process easier.
Do you think that's something that, you know, I don't know, maybe artificial intelligence takes a whack at, and they create some type of super robotic picker arm system that is able to, with, you know, cameras and lenses, be able to determine that's a bottle, that's plastic, that's paper?
Oh yeah, that is certainly being developed currently. In fact, we've got some of those very simple systems in the Twin Cities right now when it comes to glass. It used to be that you had to keep all your glass separated by color, but now they have an automated system where they crush the glass to a certain size, and then the photo eyes will read what color glass it is, and then it moves down the conveyor, and they can calculate where they need to blast that piece of glass with jets of air in order to separate it. So we do have some of those systems currently in place, but there is a process right now where they're trying to use robotics with photo eyes and X-ray diffraction to actually identify the different types of plastics, particularly, so that wow. These things can be sorted automatically. So it's coming. It's going to take some time, but I think it will be here sooner than we think.
So if you had to timeline the efforts by you and others to get this Zero Waste Campus resolution pushed through at the University of Minnesota, how do you see that playing out?
Well, we're hoping we're going to be meeting with committee members right now for other committees within the University Senate to get their support. And then the idea is that by probably March, that it will go, the resolutions will go before the full Senate for vote. So that's what we're hoping. And then beyond that, once we get that going, depending on how much support we get and efforts that are put into it, when we've done things like this campus-wide before, when we put in new processes or a new step into our collection process, it takes about 18 months to hit every building on campus to do, you know, to change the containers and then do the education so that people know what's going on. So, you know, maybe within a year and a half from the time we pass that resolution, we should have a campus that's closer to a zero waste campus than it is now.
Well, and hopefully some of the things that you guys come up with there spread out into the rest of the community and the world, because, you know, we are such a consumption based society. I mean, you look at all the boxes from Amazon and, you know, it's amazing how much cardboard is generated anymore and what becomes of all of that, you know?
Yeah, we've seen the cardboard increased. I'm sure a lot of the residence halls are getting all those deliveries too.
Sure. You bet. Yeah. You bet they are. And
yeah,
you know, it, and I think that falls on, you know, some of these, you know, giant companies too, to be able to go, you know what, maybe we can try to find a way to help the recycling process so that we all kind of benefit from that rather than just filling up landfills.
Well, you know, getting to that zero waste effort is going to require a change in the way we produce materials too. It's like when we're trying to do that resolution, is that we have to change what we purchase so that it will fit into those recovery categories. So yeah, a lot has to be done on the purchasing end, and a lot has to be done on the manufacturing, on how products are made so that they can be easily recovered and recycled.
Well, keep fighting the good fight there, Dana.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, we'll keep fighting. A war against waste.
Dana, it's ongoing. Dana Donatucci from the University of Minnesota, trying to become a zero waste campus when it comes to their recycling efforts and what they're doing at the U of M, and hopefully we'll be doing more of. It's Moose Miller in tonight here on WCCO for Gerilyn Steele. When we come back here, you've heard about the new Star Wars game, right, from EA? Well, it's creating a little bit of controversy because some people are saying that this game, and it's not getting good reviews in a lot of corners, are saying it's more of like an online casino preying on kids. We'll explain when we come back here on WCCO. Yeah, Moose Miller in tonight for Gerilyn Steele. Brendan Berger working hard behind the scenes here. I thought I'd pull him in for a little perspective on what exactly is going on here. You know, when Disney bought the Star Wars franchise, I went, okay, how's this going to work out? Because Disney is good at sucking every dollar out of your wallet. They have a fantastic theme park experience and all of that. But EA Games now has this Battlefront 2 Star Wars game out there that has already raised the ire of some politicians that are saying basically it's an online casino that gets kids or young people that are playing these games into a cycle of gambling money for a chance to win game upgrades. And I don't know about you, Brendan, but that seems to be kind of a dangerous slippery slope for the gaming industry to be traveling down anyway.
Well, speaking as a gamer, number one, my reaction is whenever you hear a politician talking about video games as a gamer, you cringe because it always is bad when they become involved. But I guess this is a symptom of a much larger and more insidious practice in gaming, which is, well, we were just talking about it during the break. Basically, a developer will make a game and then will release what amounts to about 60% of it, and then offer to sell you the last 40% in, you know, broken up into two or three pieces, and they'll call them expansions. But really, it's just creating what would otherwise be a complete product, and that's what got EA in trouble, is not so much that they're doing it, it's just they were charging an unusually high price for it.
Sure. But you also have this microcurrency thing that is coming into play that allows you to, I think, buy in, you know, like additional things within the game. I don't know if that's a part of this game, but that has, you know, been around for a little while in the gaming world. But some, I think, game writers and creators are really, I think, pushing the limits on some of that stuff.
Well, some are much worse than others. Like, the good developers won't nickel and dime you, but there are others where it's like, hey, you bought our game, but you would like to start playing? For a small fee of 50 cents, you can push the start button. You know, some of them are really almost that petty. So, like, in the case of Battlefront, it's possible to actually earn all of the rewards that started this problem without paying for them, but you would have to put in something like 4,000 hours or something to get them
all.
Really? Yeah. So, it's basically a way that you can join the game and then just buy your way to all these rewards you want, but Battlefront drew ire because, again, there was, you know, at one point you would have had to spend what was the equivalent of about $80 to unlock Darth Vader as a character.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, that's just crazy. That's just wrong,
well,
I think.
And the game was already $80. That's the thing. Yeah.
Well, and some people don't realize that going into that.
Well, and when you have a little kid who's sort of, especially if their parents have linked it to a credit card.
Right. They're like, we're buying it. We're getting it. They don't understand the consequence of, you know, just getting that power and that permission granted to them until the parent gets the bill and goes, what the hell just happened?
Why did you spend $200 on this game I already bought?
Yeah.
Also, it's a cruel taunt to me who works in radio because I don't have $80 to spend on nice things.
Yeah. They're denying us. So anyway, we'll see where this all leads, because there's a couple politicians that are trying to take action. Hawaiian State Representative Chris Lee and Sean Quinlan are trying to protect underage kids from game monetization practices. We'll see where things end up with them down the road. Coming up here, we'll check the WCCO weather forecast, and then Brent Scoreup is going to try to convince me as to why net neutrality and changing it, altering it, is a good thing, why that's going to be good for the future of the internet. Call me skeptical, but, you know, I'm open to hearing all sides on this. But Brent's a research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. We'll see what he has to say about this coming up on the Gerald and Steele Show here on WCCO.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.